Hello, ladies and gents. Welcome again. A new edition, a new episode of Absolute Truth. Absolutely. This is your host, Gio. I am the youth leader of LWYM Living Word Youth Ministries in Miami, Florida. And again, this is Absolute Truth, absolutely your podcast. And as always, our beloved guest, my father and pastor of Living Word Church in Miami, Florida, Jesus Martinez.
Thank you, Gio. I appreciate the opportunity to share with your audience the many beautiful things that the Lord has taught us throughout the years. So it's always a pleasure for me to join you in this podcast.
Well, today, it might not be too much of a pleasure for us to deal with a certain topic we're going to deal with today, because we're certainly going to receive some backlash, but hey, that's what truth does. There are going to be people that are not going to like what we're speaking about, and therefore they're going to be angry because you're exposing the truth. And today we are going to talk about feminism. Whoopee, that's awesome, isn't it?
It's one of those house-divided topics, but you have to tackle them. Because if the balance is lost for whatever reason, then the one side, the wrong side could take the advantage.
That's right.
And then the rest of the people are
Absolutely.
Hurt.
Absolutely. So we want to make a point to let it know beforehand, before anyone jumps to any conclusions. We're not chauvinist pigs. We're not bigoted sexist. We're not trying to return anyone to the dark ages. We just want to take an objective, unbiased look at feminism and clearly showcase via the evidences, the truths, the facts, that's what we're going to show here, that feminism has truly been a destructive force in our society. And that's what we're going to attempt to do. So I don't want anyone jumping into any conclusion saying, oh, these guys are just looking at it via their worldview, this, that, and the other thing. No. We're going to look at things objectively and unbiased. So please listen to the entire program before we jump to any conclusions. As a matter of fact, one of the things that we want to show is that there are many people, even within the Christian community, who might have adopted these ideals without knowing what it is that they are embracing. And hopefully, after knowing the facts, you will now be placed in a position where you can now be free of that mentality, which enslaves you, which puts you into sin.
And the strange thing about what you just mentioned, that is Christians embracing some of these issues, is that people like Marie or Mary Carmichael Stopes, who spoke on these issues. She was a paleobotanist, campaigner for women's rights, and a pioneer in the field of birth control. One of the things that she enjoyed the most was protesting at places of worship. And so I believe once Christians understand what is behind these issues and what the origin of the movement entailed, and how, in fact, Jill, what they wish to do is trample upon biblical principles, I think they'll take a closer look at what they've been embracing, and hopefully they will come to the light.
Absolutely. Let's start from the very beginning, because it's important to note, and I think I'm not going to speak for you, because you know, you're your own individual and you want to make sure you leave these things clearly established. I myself don't have problems with every single aspect of feminism. What do I mean by that? The very beginnings of feminism were actually created, or the movement was created, to correct some injustices, if you will.
Absolutely.
So in our modern Western world, women generally enjoy greater freedoms than any other previous generation have enjoyed or had enjoyed. We're looking at women that fought for voting rights, for property ownership, equal pay. And what about this initial movement of feminism? Well, it's commonly known as the first wave of feminism. And this first wave encompassed people, or people that were the, I guess, the promoters of this first wave, were people like Susan B. Anthony, Elizabeth Cady Stanton, and Lucretia Mott. And these people were pushing for equality for women. Why? Because even in the United States, in our Western civilization, women were many times considered second-class citizens. And they were the sorts of people that said, we need to rise up and correct these injustices. This is very different from second wave feminism, which we'll get into in just a second. They were fighting for these things. And eventually there was legislation that was passed that, in other words, approved of what they were trying to promote. For example, the 19th Amendment to our U.S. Constitution, which states and gives women equal rights to vote. And from that also we get equal pay, and we get property ownership, et cetera, et cetera, which came down the line. And of course, the Representation of the People Act of 1918. So we leave clearly established that these people were basing their ideals on moral biblical issues.
And if not all of them, some of the founders definitely had good intentions. I'm not going to put my neck out, I'm not going to stick my neck out for all of them, but I believe a good deal of them, a good amount of them had good intentions. And mind you, Gio, if some people believe that women's right have reached their plateau, that it's a global thing, all they need to look is as far as China,
yep,
where infanticide, which is still practiced, is mostly applied to girls.
Yep.
And so I believe there is still some work to be done in this area, but I agree with you. I think some of the things that have been accomplished are for the good.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that we'll get into eventually, but I think it's a good point to expound on what you were just saying. People like Plato, Aristotle, you have preached on this recently. Plato said if there are babies that are born with defects, you can kill them, you can drown them.
Yep.
Aristotle taught the same thing. He taught, in essence, he was into population control before Margaret Sanger and Darwin and Malthus and all these people were into this. He wrote that the Greeks should, in essence, put a limit on how many kids parents should have. And if, you know, they exceeded that number, that they should kill them from the womb. So we see that this stuff goes way back.
Yeah, this from the people that gave us philosophy and thought. And it moved on into the Roman culture, where the great senator philosopher Seneca also talked about killing feeble boys, weak boys, and girls. Well, once again, even if they were 100% healthy, the earliest findings that we have of Roman law, which is 450 before Christ, was already saying that you could kill little boys if they were weak or feeble, and little girls just by choice if you wanted to.
Well, even before then, we look in the book of Exodus. What is the thing that Pharaoh says? Going to kill all these young male childs, because he saw that the Israelites were growing in numbers. So we see infanticide from the very beginnings.
Right.
So continuing, so now we have established that this first movement, this first wave, as it's commonly known, of feminism had good intentions. Now we move into the early part of the 20th century. And there are those that take hold, they take hostage feminism and begin to twist its ideals and make things look in an ethical light when in reality their intentions were all the opposite. Enter Margaret Sanger and Betty Friedan. Margaret Sanger first in the early part of the 20th century, and then Betty Friedan during the 1950s and 1960s, especially during the sexual revolution. So we look at these two individuals. They were the talking heads and the chief representatives of this new generation of women who wanted more than equality. And when you ask even modern feminists and ask them, for example, about Susan B. Anthony and Lucretia Mott and whatnot, they say, no, they didn't do enough. We needed to go more. In other words, what they were trying to promote, when you look at their teachings, is libertinism and genocidal concepts. Not freedoms, but libertinisms. But they shrouded themselves with this cloak of saying, no, 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 we have good intentions for women. But as we'll examine later on, they were anything but.
I think one of the things that promoters of certain movements understand is that you cannot push the envelope way too far. So in understanding that another group, other people, will come behind them and move or push the envelope a bit further, they know exactly where to take it to. And I believe, as you have just mentioned, eugenics is definitely in the portals, it's in the area of that second movement.
Well, in the second wave, we see some of the things that were moved here, and they're still moved. For example, free sex, libertinism, promiscuity, eugenics, abortion rights, Marxism, socialism, deconstruction of the traditional family, misrepresentation of scriptural gender roles, and what even Margaret Sanger is quoted as saying as a new morality, which we know is a perverted morality. Well, it's important to say before we continue, Margaret Sanger is probably more known nowadays than Betty Friedan, because a lot of the arguments surrounding abortion center around her organization, which she founded, Planned Parenthood.
Right.
Which they are the largest, if I'm not mistaken, the largest provider of abortions in the United States. I can't really speak for the rest of the world, but I know in the United States they provide a lot of abortions. This has been documented plenty. So let's get into a little bit about Margaret Sanger, to see what it was that she espoused and how it is that people are moving forward her ideology. Let's talk a little bit about her books, Woman and the New Race and The Pivot of Civilization. We see that feminists point to these books to say these were the spearheads of the abortion movement, of the free sex movement in the feminist movement. Before we continue, I'd like to get your thoughts on, because you grew up during a generation where this shift was actually happening. The things that you saw where you can clearly look back now and say, you know, I see this working in society. What were some of the arguments that were being portrayed, being brought forth so that society can adopt these ideals and therefore move forward with them?
Well, it was said over and over again that women were repressed, that women were damaged goods because they held truth, facts, their sexuality, many of these things from them. And so in the love generation and the hippie movement, women came to the forefront with these ideas, not just asking now for freedoms, as have been detailed in some of the legislation, but they wanted to express this publicly, and they went into the we are burning the bras issue. They redefined pornography. It's not really pornography. It's our freedom to express ourselves, even if it's in picture form, in film form. So we saw the twisting and the turning of these things that were fought for, talking about equality, and turn into something that went way beyond equality, and now it's all about, at the end of the day, Gio, I think at the end of the day, it's all about eugenics now. It's about controlling the masses, and it's about fixing or improving the gene pool, and that's where I see this thing moving to at a great pace. And if we go back to the middle 1800s, we see the first thoughts, the first ideas of eugenics moving along. And I don't know who decided to write who. It could have been the eugenics writing the female movement or the feminist movement or vice versa. The thing is that they have become joined at the hip.
Well, Margaret Sanger was a promoter, a heavy promoter of eugenics. I've read her book, Woman in the New Race. It wasn't a pleasant experience. I mean, I highlighted the book in plenty of pages. I've got just pages of highlights where stuff, you know, quotes and whatnot. But in essence, she derives her thought processes from people like Charles Darwin, Thomas Malthus, which a lot of people think that originate this, but like we said before, this goes way back, infanticide and eugenics and whatnot. Havelock Ellis, which writes the preceding area to her book, the preceding article to her book. Now,
can I interject something here? Yeah. There's also a link to politics, and there is also a link to entertainment or the arts. Let me read for the audience a small list that I have of people that have embraced eugenics. Of course, Charles Darwin, the most infamous of them all, Adolf Hitler. Mm-hmm. But then look at this, Gio. Winston Churchill, Margaret Sanger, of course, Mary Stopes. She was a Brit, and she promoted the birth control idea like none other. Then there's H.G. Wells, mm-hmm. also a Brit, and a socialist.
A lot of people think that, and I'll interject this, a lot of people think that Margaret Sanger had a thing with H.G. Wells later on.
Could very well be. So we have H.G. Wells, also a socialist, and he studied biology under Thomas Henry Huxley. This would be Darwin's bulldog. Yeah. He went on to marry his cousin. He hung around her for about 3 years and then left her for one of his students. Mm. Then there's Teddy Roosevelt, whose leadership in the progressive movement is well known. Well, what is the progressive movement? It's nothing but a code word, a cover word for socialism. Yeah. Then there's George Bernard Shaw, another playwright. He wrote more than 60 plays, and he founded the Race for the Betterment Foundation, which became the new eugenics movement in America. So there is definitely a link between politics, the arts, the sciences, and eugenics.
Yeah, and just to define eugenics here, it's basically, and this is our definition, the practice of perfecting the human race by sterilizing those who were deemed, quote, unfit. These are words that all of these people used at one point or another to breed.
Yeah, and it was coined by Sir Francis Galton in 1883, and it comes from the Greek word, the unity of the Greek words, eu, which is good, and genes, born.
Well, there you go. So Margaret Sanger, in essence, now uses the feminist movement to move forward this ideology of eugenics, of creating a master race or a new race, as she uses it. So in her book...
And it all sounds so noble on the top.
Yeah.
We just don't want families to suffer with bad babies, defective babies, damaged babies. So please, let us help you create the perfect baby.
Well, yeah, that's what it's all about.
Yeah.
And then she uses these terminologies in her book, Woman and the New Race. Listen to what she uses to describe these children. Quotes, human waste, clogs of civilizations, a burden, cheap, weaklings, and defectives. These words she uses interchangeably and over again in her books. And listen to what she says in, again, Woman and the New Race. This first one comes from page 57. And it says, the most serious evil of our times is that of encouraging and bringing into the world large families. The most immoral practice of the day is breeding too many children, end quote. And this other quote comes from page 229, where she states, birth control itself is nothing more or less than the facilitation of the process of weeding out the unfit, of preventing the birth of defectives or of those who will become defectives, end quote. So now we see how she brings this into society, how she tries to present it in an ethical light. And now, up until this day, we have millions of women going to the abortionist office to do this and, in essence, do her bidding for her to try to weed out the unfit.
And it becomes a mindset. When we finally got the news that we were going to have our second child, the doctor said, I think there's issues with this baby. And the minute she said that, she was quick to point out that abortion was readily available. Mm. On Sunday after the service, I was talking to a young couple who had their first baby, and the little girl had some issues. Now they're just glad, really glad that they have her, and she means everything in their lives now. And they were commenting to me after the service, you know, as you were preaching and teaching the Word of God, it took us back to that moment where we knew we had issues with our babies, and the doctor was quick to point out abortion is readily available.
In other
words, it becomes a mindset.
Yeah, it's become, I guess, the first option. It's become the first option in many people's minds. So you have there the initial promoter of this second wave. Even though it's important to point out, a lot of people will try to leave Sanger out of the mix because they don't want that tainting. They don't want that spot over the second wave of feminism, and they'll try to leave her out. And I've seen this happen.
The cruelty and the harshness and just some of the words that she employed, of course they want to run away from her.
Absolutely. Now, this is where Betty Friedan comes in. Because even Margaret Sanger spoke about taking away the control of women's body, allowing the feminine spirit to run free, and taking away the control from the submission of man. That's a quote that we get also from Margaret Sanger's book. And this is where Betty Friedan comes in. She rides the coattails of this other side of the wave, the second wave of feminism, to say, you know, housewives are mistreated. They need liberty. They are enslaved to their husbands, to their children. I have countless housewives telling me, this is all Betty Friedan speaking, that they feel like they are slaves to their house, to their children, to their husbands. In other words, Betty Friedan in the book, The Feminine Mystique, presents the housewife, the wife who takes care and rears her own children, as an enslaved person that needs liberation because she has not been allowed in this patriarchal idea of marriage to reach her full potential.
And this is where the modern shift begins to manifest itself more clearly. And by this, I mean the attack on Christian principles. This is why at the very beginning of this podcast, I talked a little bit about Mary or Marie. I'm not quite sure how that first name is pronounced, Ms. Carmichael Stopes. One of the things that she got a kick out of was protesting, you know, in front of the places of worship, because way back then, she was born in 1880 and she died in 1958, she was already placing the blame for the oppression of women on Christianity, on the Bible, which, Gio, it's such an unfair argument, and it's just lies.
Yep.
Let's call it what it is, because if you listen to Jesus, if you listen to Paul, if you listen to Peter, they all bring women up to that same place where men have always existed. Yep. And so it's not only unfair, it's just a lot of lies that have been thrown against the Bible, against Christ, against Paul, against Peter. And I think they see this as a common enemy. And this is once again why I talk about Ms. Stopes, because I believe this goes back to the 1800s. And now it brings it into your field and my field. Yep. This is Christianity, yep, our faith. And we need to tackle this head on before, you know, it goes further than it has gone.
Well, a lot of feminists embrace it. Margaret Sanger, in her book, The Woman in the New Race, she went and attacked Peter, and she went and attacked Paul, saying, you see, and she took certain verses from Ephesians 5 and from 1 Peter 3. It says, see, it says, submit to your husbands. Oh, there you go. They're endorsing subjugation, a slave-type subjugation to the husband, but they've omitted, very craftily, the other portions of the scripture. For example, when we read in 1 Peter 3, verse 7, Peter says of the wife that she is a co-inheritor, a co-heir of the grace that we now enjoy. And then also in Ephesians chapter 5, when we look at what Paul states there, it says that we husbands must have this same feeling that Christ has for the church, that he sacrificed himself for her, talking about this dedication to the wife. So while they're saying through one side of the mouth, here is Peter and Paul in the Bible negating women's rights and subjugating them and oppressing them, we see that Paul, Peter, and Jesus say, no, wait a minute. The women were also created in God's image and likeness, and they should also enjoy these freedoms. But yet the feminist movement contorts these things out of it. They decontextualize them in order to present their argument.
Yeah, they make it sound like slavery.
Yeah.
But Gio, I talked about the unfairness, the lies of those arguments. In 5:21, that is Ephesians 5:21, it says, submitting yourself one to another. So it's not just husbands, yep, and wives. The thing kicks off by saying, submitting yourselves one to another in the fear of God. In other words, we're not talking about slavery. We are not talking about mistreatment. We are not talking about one being greater than the other. This is something that is born out of free will, yep, and it's for the common good of the family, of the household, of society. In other words, it deals with the very nature of sin, which is rebellion.
Yep.
And so I don't understand why certain people, when talking about Christians now, when they hear the gospel, Christ, Paul, and Peter slammed hard like they are slammed, why don't they say, let me take a good look at this, because the gospel has had enemies in the past and it continues to have enemies today.
Yeah. Making a point on what you just said and everything we've just said, which is supremely important, we got to go back for a second to Betty Friedan. Two things that stand out about her words, her actions, and her belief system and her ideology. She did two things which we see the damaging and the devastating effects that it has in our society nowadays. Number one, attack the household, attack the wife, attack the husband, attack the children. How does she do this? When we read in page number 78 of the 2001 revised edition of The Feminine Mystique, she says, quote, we can no longer ignore that voice within women that says, I want something more than my husband and my children and my home. Never mind the possessions. What about the husband and the kids? In other words, she's showcasing her heart that she couldn't care any less about her husband. She couldn't care any less about her children. It's all about me. It's like you were saying, rebellion. It's all about pride.
And some of the things that we are seeing today where it's hard to pick up if the behavior of a certain individual is manly or feminine, you could trace back to her, because she talked about creating a softer man.
Yeah.
A man that would be more tender, that would cry a lot easier. And so one of the things that took place and has continued to take place is the exchange of roles.
Yeah.
And so I go back to Christ, who said in the beginning God created them, man and woman. And we must stick to that position, because at the end of the day, if we don't, we suffer. And having used the word suffer, look at the problems that have been created by embracing the extremes, the radical, the things that were never really, like you said at the beginning of the podcast, perhaps not the ideals of feminism. It went overboard, and now we are starting to pay the price.
Now, in conclusion, what we're saying is that we need to return back to the scriptural gender roles. That's what we're trying to say here. You know, if we want to protect the family, if we want to preserve it, if we want our kids to grow up as upright men and women of God, we have to go back to these roles that the scripture tells us, the biblical principles for the man, the husband, for the wife, the women, for the children. Because if not, then what we have is a destructive society like we're seeing nowadays.
Look, all things that don't have a manual, it takes a long time for you to figure them out, and you cause a lot of damage along the way. So I cannot see how our Creator would not leave a manual. Yeah. He has left a manual,
yes.
His Word. And if we follow it, we will enjoy blessings. We will be happy. If we decide this is not the manual, we're going to go about it by trial and error, then you know what? We're going to create a lot of headaches for ourselves, and we already have.
Oh, yeah. Well, look, I'm going to leave with this conclusion, and I'll give you the last word. It's funny to me how people don't notice how feminists are more caring about themselves and being more career-minded and whatnot than their own kids. This is what this is all about. I mean, when you look at this, this is all about women rebelling against what is divine, what is holy, what is pure. Because you look at these women like Betty Friedan, the Margaret Sangers of life, the Gloria Steinems, even nowadays, you've got people like Jane Fonda and people like Sally Fields promoting these things. It's all, you know, they could care less. They couldn't care any less about the children and whatnot. It's like the whole argument that happened in Wisconsin. Remember the teachers, oh, this is about your kids. No, it wasn't. It's about their pay grade. But they want to make everyone believe that this is for the children. No, no, no. It's an evil argument to try to disguise the true intentions. And that's what feminism is all about. I'll give you the last word.
It has been asked, what is worth living for? What is worth dying for? And at the NGO, there's only one answer, love.
Yeah.
And when you look at the way people proceed today, it's not a procedure, a behavior that is born out of love. It's born out of selfishness. When the Bible teaches respect, honor, even submission one to another, wives unto the husbands, etc., it's born out of love. This is why I appreciate John so much, because he describes God in one word, God is love. And so none of the things that are prescribed to us or for us in the Bible is born out of hate. It's born out of making one person greater than another. To the contrary, it is born out of love, because God desires the best for all of us. And so I would encourage our listeners to go back and study these issues, mm-hmm. not just listen to what the promoters of feminism have been saying. Study the issues for themselves and then arrive at their own conclusions. I think many will make corrections, important, vital corrections, as to what they have been embracing and believing about the feminist movement. And once the corrections are made, I think their lives will be the better off for it.
Absolutely. Thank you for sharing with us. Once again, I'd like to invite everyone to share these podcasts with all of your family and friends. They also want to hear the truth of the matter in a world full of uncertainty. You can find our website at lwim.org/ATA, lwim.org/ATA. And also, if you have any questions, comments, or if you have any references or any ideas for future topics that we might be able to use on the or touch upon in this podcast, please email those to us, info@lwim.org, info@lwim.org. That's all the time that we have left for this episode, this edition of Absolute Truth Absolutely. For Jesus Martinez, this has been Giovanni Del Cristo saying, may the Lord shine his face on you.